Okay, so we're recording now, and welcome everyone back to another episode of Conscious Convos. Today we have a very special guest, Frederick Dodson, one of my favorite authors. And it's a pleasure to have you with us today, Fred.
Hello, everybody. Greetings from Florida, 2022. I'm happy to sit with you.
All right. So, Fred, I usually like to start with getting to know the speaker or the guest better, especially when it comes to how it all started. So you have written more than 50 books so far. A lot of it is on reality creation and consciousness, as well as history, exploring parts of history that people don't know about. But I'm curious, how did this all start? At what age did you start to develop an interest in the metaphysical world? Was it something you had since you were a child, or was there an incident in your life that sparked this interest?
Well, Mohammed, it was there from the beginning. I was very curious what's going on, like many other people are, but I really wanted to know, what is going on here? Where am I? Who am I? Is what these people are telling me true? In childhood, I had a different perception already. I saw things that other people didn't see. I left my body when other people didn't. I ask my parents what it means when I leave my body and can hear their conversations. They're sitting in the living room and I can hear it, and I tell them and they get shocked. I say, what does that mean? And they can't tell me what it means, you know? So I ask my teachers at school, they can't tell me what I mean. It means. So then the question arises, why doesn't anybody know anything about anything? Why do... That's been my question all along. Why don't people know this? Mm-hmm. Why don't they know the most basic things that I experience on a day-to-day basis? So I go to the library, and you should see me as a kid. I enjoyed playing outside, but I was also very often, I preferred to stay in while other kids were playing just to read. So I read and read. I always had big stacks of books on my desks, and my parents thought this strange. Normally, parents would support a child reading, but they thought it strange. You know, I said, why aren't you playing with the kids? Why are you reading so much? Say, I'll go play later. So through experiences, very, very many paranormal experiences, spiritual experiences, and through lots and lots of reading is how I became what I became. Then later, I started doing seminars for a company, for a institution, and I did so many seminars, you wouldn't believe it. Between the age 20 and 26, I must have done hundreds and hundreds of seminars, because I was doing seminars every week on many different topics. I became a seminar master, and that made me who I am, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it really started at an early age, and if I could sum up what you do, Fred, it seems it's a combination of teaching reality creation while at the same time not just how to create reality, but also exploring reality and what is going on in the metaphysical sense on why this is all happening and why it's all working the way it is. Right.
There's no name for it, for this job description, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I call myself consciousness researcher. Sometimes I call myself success coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exploring the nature of reality and helping people navigate and succeed in whatever reality is.
Right. Okay. So I first came across the concept of, let's say, manifestation, or that our thoughts create reality, around 2007, When the movie The Secret came out, and I believe that is that was a time when a lot of people heard about this concept for the first time. So okay, that movie was kind of just scratching the surface, but that is where I started to realize that, yeah, this idea could be true, and then I started to experiment with it, and over time I became a for me it became a fact that our thoughts do influence our reality. But I still don't I'm still not sure why it works that way. And I'll tell you my conclusion so far, but and let me know if it makes sense or you have another view on it. So in order for our thoughts to create reality, to me, it seems like what we call reality and our thoughts are both within our consciousness. And that's why they're both part of the same thing, and that's why they influence each other. So it's not like there's a reality outside and there's thoughts inside the brain and somehow making it happen. It's all one inside the consciousness, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Okay.
It can't be any other way. It's a childish view to think that there's this reality out there and that you're sending out somehow thoughts to influence it. It's childish. It's correct. You are an electromagnetic being, and what you see out there is also energy. And these interact all the time anyway, whether you're manifesting or not, you're constantly in interaction with other electromagnetic beings and objects and scenarios and landscapes and places. But it's not about physical reality, isn't that exciting, really? It's more about the energy exchange between people and how what you hold in mind tends to manifest. It's not really that it manifests, it's already there. It's you notice what's already there. If I hold this in mind, then I notice it out there, even though there is no out there. So what you're saying makes perfect sense. Yes.
Okay. And I also remember reading in one of your articles that if you hold a specific idea in mind, as you just said, you're gonna notice it. If you're persistent enough, it's only a matter of time. But why is it that some things appear very quickly and some things can take a couple of years or more to show up? How does time fit in this picture?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I tell people it's thought, word, and deed, not only thought. These are your creative powers. I say you're a divine being. You've been given these powers already. You don't have to ask for them. You already have them by birth. And these powers of thought, word, feeling, deed can be focused on anything you choose. So the most important thing for you is to choose wisely what you put your thought, word, and deed into. Now, as for time, because in consciousness there is no time, anything you feel you already have in the now, in this electromagnetic field, in this energy field. It's already there. But physical reality is dense. You've got levels of density, such as steam, water, and ice are three levels of density. So you're asking me, how long does it take for steam to crystallize as ice? How long does it take for a thought to become physical reality? Well, I'm telling you, whatever you want, you can speed it up by adding word, which is like water, and action, which is like ice. So you got steam, water, ice, which is thaw, word, and deed. That's how you can speed it up. But you can also speed it up by feeling that you already have it and already acting from it today. It's one of the concepts that I teach. Can you act from a place of your goal already true? Can you behave like your goal is already true? If you can do that, it doesn't matter to you when it comes true. And the moment it no longer matters to you when it comes true, it's already true. Mm-hmm. It's paradoxical, but you should have an interest in making it come true, but then start already living that reality today. For example, if I want to be rich, I ask myself, why do I want to be rich? Well, because I want to have that sense of peace and relief. I don't want to be under time pressure all the time. And then you realize, wait a minute, I can already feel that way today. I can reject time pressure. If somebody's pressuring me in time, I will reject that and say, I will go in my own pace. So by taking the thing that I want, if I'm rich and already being that today, I'm actually going to speed up the manifestation of making money. Can you follow?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty clear. And the part about deeds, which is basically taking action, that's also another delicate part of the equation, because I know that we don't want to take too much action and also not take too little action. And that is something sometimes I struggle with. I don't know whether I'm taking enough or I'm doing too much and I get tired. So how do we know the right balance that, okay, this is enough action, and if I do more, it's going to be counterproductive to achieve what I'm trying to, the results that I'm trying to get.
Overworking is one of the big problems in society, actually. It's a slave mentality. And when it becomes like a slave, that's when it's counterproductive and does not help your manifestation. You become a slave to work, as if you have to work, as if work is the primary manifester. People think it's about work. That's what's going to manifest it. That's a false idea. Work and action is only the outermost tip. First, you want the right state, the right attitude, and then you want to choose something you enjoy. And because you're a physical being, you like to work. It's good to work. It's good to be active. Mm-hmm. But as soon as it turns into an addiction, or the thought that you must work, you must do this in order to succeed, that's when it starts becoming a workaholic, basically. Mm-hmm. But I must add to this that most people are workaholics in this society. They've been trained to just be like factory slaves. And that's not what I mean by deed or action. Mm. Deed or action is taking inspired action, because you are inspired to do it. You're interested. You're eager. When you feel interested, fascinated, drawn to something, that's inspired action, not compensation action. Compensation action is saying, okay, I'm overweight, so now I have to punish myself for eating too much. And I'll go to the gym and really punish myself. That's compensation action. Inspired action is saying, I feel like I want to move my body. I'm going to the gym. It'll be fun. I can really experience my body. Ah, this is nice. Compensation action is when I say, okay, I've got to work for this company for 5 more years. Then I can maybe ask for a pay raise. If just 5 more years of this grueling, stupid job, and then maybe I can get into a better position, that's compensation action. That's horrible. Inspired action is what's the vision of this company? Does it align with mine? How can I best serve this company? It's a different, it's in attitude, really.
Right. And I think reflecting on my personal experience on inspired action, I think this podcast itself is an example of it, because when myself and I also have a co-host who's not here today, but when we started this podcast, it didn't feel like we were working at all. It was really a lot, minimal effort, but we enjoyed it a lot. And with that minimal effort, I was suddenly putting out a lot of episodes with guests that I really admire and respect, getting a lot of positive feedback. And people would assume that there was a team working on this that is trying to reach out to all these people and putting everything together, while in fact it was just myself and my co-host probably doing 3-4 hours a week and that's it. But it just worked out so naturally, and it's probably because of that that it didn't feel like work. It was inspired action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My wife always asks me, why do you work so much? And I say, I want to. I want to work. I actually love my work. You know, and I say, when you find the work that's right for you, you will want to work.
Absolutely. And now another thing that is related to the concept of reality creation is that I've heard some teachers or speakers say that only things that are for your highest good are going to manifest. But is this, I struggle a little bit with this concept.
That's not true.
Is it? Yeah, this is my question. Is it only things that are for our highest good going to happen? Or does it apply to everything, so I can manifest things that are not good for me?
Unfortunately, you've been given free will. That's fortunate, but also unfortunate. And that's why we have so many problems in the world, because people have free will. But it's a good thing, because if we didn't have free will, what's the point, you know? And with our free will, we can create very destructive things, and we have been. All you have to do is look into the world to know the statement is not true. Anybody who tells you humans can only manifest what's in the highest good are look into the world. Now, from a higher perspective, everything has a purpose. There's a higher intelligence, in my view, and this higher intelligence knows what it's doing. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that anything we manifest is good.
Yeah.
It's you can manifest from personal will, and you can manifest from higher self or divine will, and it's a different feeling, a different quality. Humans should be able to manifest both from source or from personal will. You should exercise your free will, but not everything that comes from you, your ego, is necessarily good. But that's okay, because you learn from it. Either you earn or you learn. So I've manifested many things that weren't good for me. I forced them. Often when there's an element of forcing it, that's when it's negative. And when it's effortless, it's usually divine will. It was going to happen anyway. It's part of your life plan. So you can force things to happen. I've done it many, many times, but it's not really, it's not good for you. But again, I think everybody should go through that experience themselves, because the older they get and they try out different manifestation techniques and things, they'll figure it out themselves. They'll figure out that there's a gentle way to go about things and there's a forceful way to go about them. I like to say that you can either swim with the stream and that will get you to your goal more effortlessly. You can ride the horse where it's already going, or you can swim against the stream with your own will. And that's good for another purpose. It makes you stronger. Exercising your own will makes you much, much stronger, but it's not always pleasant. Mm. And it doesn't get you places as quickly. Does that somehow make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. I do believe there's a perfect order in the universe. So literally anything that happens is part of this perfect order. The thing about the highest good used to frustrate me a little bit because taking an example, if let's say I have a goal of making $1 million and it still hasn't happened, someone might come and say, well, it hasn't happened because it's not in your highest good, right? It seems like an excuse, like an excuse to give ourselves, oh, it's not in my highest good, so I'm just not going to try anymore. But I always believe that I can make it in my highest good. I mean, there should be some flexibility there. That's my
prosperity opinion. Yeah, well, you're right. Prosperity is always in your highest good. Because the universe itself is prosperity. So poverty is not in the highest good. Prosperity is what the universe is. And it's very good for everyone to be very prosperous. However, sometimes I found that you yourself subconsciously will block it because you don't want it to crush you. The analogy I have for that is a plant, you know. Sometimes waits until it has stronger roots before it grows high. If it would grow high without the strong roots, the wind of the $1 million will just crush it, will just make it fall over. So you have to, if you want your million more quickly, you look into your own subconscious why you secretly might be holding back a little bit before you come out completely as a millionaire. There's we want to have stronger roots before we allow ourselves to have full abundance. However, once you figure this out, once you figure out there's a reason you're holding back, you can manifest the million more quickly. Mm. Does that somehow make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. And where does the concept of limiting beliefs fall into place here? Is it important? Is it necessary to find out what unconscious limiting beliefs we have and try to resolve them? Or is just doing the exercise of, you know, visualizing, saying the right words, taking the inspired action, is that enough? So do we need to dig in for limiting beliefs and let them go, or not necessarily?
You first start without that, because many things manifest without digging. But if it still doesn't manifest, then it's time to look at counter intentions, like I just talked about, secret thoughts, secret subconscious things that are holding you back. So you try to manifest something, it manifests. I usually don't go digging because I don't like to dig in the trash. It's pointless, digging in the trash, I call it. Why do you dig in the trash? Why don't you just make something nice? But if the same thing keeps happening, it's obviously due to some subconscious belief that you're holding, and then you look.
Right. Okay.
So let's say you keep wanting to be a millionaire and you're still not, and still not. Well, then let's have a look. The first thing I would ask is, how does it benefit you not to be a millionaire? And that pretty quickly brings up the beliefs that are holding you back.
Right. Got it. So it's more of a selective option. We don't always need to do it unless we feel that there could be something holding us back or slowing down the result that we're looking for. Now, I know you also put out a book on healing recently. I read it. You can heal anyone, if I'm not mistaken. That's the title of the book. Does healing, and here I mean physical healing in particular, does it follow the same law as manifesting anything else? And the reason I ask is because it seems that the stories about healing are much more spontaneous. It seems like people put an intention out to heal someone, and then, you know, it goes against what the medical community says, because, you know, things heal a lot faster. There's a spontaneous remission of something, of cancer, for example. And so does it follow the same law, or how does it work when it comes to healing?
I think the book You Can Heal Anyone is also a manifesting book. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit quicker and easier to heal than to manifest other stuff, because it's something we're equipped with by nature. We have these qualities.
Mm.
How should I say this? It's something we're supposed to do. We're meant to help each other. Mm. And by helping each other, that usually, when it comes from the heart, it usually manifests more quickly than, say, I want a Porsche, you know, I want a Porsche and two blonde women here, mm-hmm. on each side, which comes from the ego, and it doesn't really come from the heart. You feel it somewhere else. So that might take longer to manifest than feeling something in the heart. Okay, I'll put it this way, because it's from the heart, it usually works better. But yes, it's also simple manifesting.
Okay, so what comes from the heart works better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I never thought of things that way. This is interesting. Okay, all right. And
if you're not feeling anything, it doesn't work that well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I know that there's, or I think at least, that there's other laws working in parallel in reality. So, let me give an example. Let's say I'm trying to, my goal is to feel peaceful. Okay, my goal is to achieve inner peace. But and I, you know, I visualize myself feeling peaceful and all that. But in my past, I've hurt a lot of people, and I never apologized to them. And for example, so this past hurting of people is going to make me feel like I did something wrong. So unless I fix that, no matter how much I just try to manifest feeling peaceful, I don't think it's going to work, because there's another law working at the same time. Does that make sense? Or is that all one thing?
It's the same law, because you've already manifested these things. You've sent out your intentions and energy to these people and perhaps harmed them. And it's already manifested. And then saying, well, it didn't manifest, is self-contradictory.
Mm.
Okay. Right. So you harm someone and then you say, I'm at peace. It contradicts each other. You manifest, I harm this person, and then you manifest, there's no harm. It's not congruent.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it is all part of the same thing.
Yeah. So you can, one thing is you, one thing to take back the energy is to apologize or to make up for it, you know. Manifesting should never be an avoidance of a lot of people use manifesting to avoid dealing with the consequences of their own creations. So, for example, they create poverty for themselves, and then they're like, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich, trying to avoid what they themselves are creating.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Now, one thing, Fred, that I also noticed in your writings that I didn't see in other in some other speakers or authors is that you do mention God in your writings. This for me fits perfectly in my worldview, because I believe that maybe our thoughts are kind of a tool that, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but God uses to create reality. But the ultimate creator is God. So I've seen a lot of authors, teachers make it seem like it's all us. Like we are the only creators of our reality, therefore putting God completely out of the equation. Or maybe it's a matter of, you know, they don't want to alienate people, because some people don't like the mention of God. I guess they equate it with being religious, and there's a lot of baggage that comes with religions these days. But for me, I'm comfortable saying that God is creating and we are influencing somehow. Where does that fit for you? I mean, where does God fit in your perspective on this topic?
Well, without the source that created you, you can't really create anything. You also can't succeed long term. You run out of, if it's all from yourself, you run out of energy eventually, and then you have to find energy elsewhere, and then you get into really negative things. So it's not a good teaching. I know many teach like this because they don't want to alienate people. But I represent the type of person who can talk God but not be religious. I'm not religious at all. So that's rare. I don't know. People think either you're religious or you don't talk about God. But there's something else. You can talk about God because it's reality. Okay? It's... that doesn't mean I'm religious. Religion and God are often two different, entirely different things. So a fish needs water. I wrote this a few days ago. A fish needs water. A plant needs the ground to thrive. And I need the source I come from to thrive. Without that source, I'm going to run out of energy eventually. So it's more like I'm a part, I'm taken out of source. I'm taken out of God. It's like God projected many, many miniature versions to go out and experience realities from unique perspectives. And one day we're going to be taken back, hopefully. So I don't see any long-term success. I mean, you can have some success for a while, but it's difficult. You need to look at the fruits, the results of the people who believe in a higher power and those who don't. And those who don't, those who reject it, you'll see in a lifespan, not just the moment, but a lifespan, problems come up. Because they run out of energy and they got to get the energy somewhere else. Then I get the energy out of drugs or shopping or entertainment or worse, you know, harming people. There's many ways to get energy, but if I have the energy of my creator, things are more effortless. they're easier. Then I don't have to compensate. I don't need drugs. I don't need shopping, entertainment. I've got the energy. I've got all the energy. Mm. The problem with religion is that it often reduces people in their power. So there's different extremes, you know, and then people go like, oh, I have no power at all. All the power is only with God. But I say, no, no. You've been given that power by God. You've been given authority. You've been given the power. So you got the religious extreme, and then you got the anti-religious extreme. You know, and that's all. It's all just nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very clear. Now, I wanna. I'm curious about something, Fred, that I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, that you wrote 50 books, and I read, or actually I listened, because I'm more of a listener, I enjoy the audio format, probably to 20 something out of these books. One thing I've noticed is that every page is filled with information. So it's you're the type of author that, and I, you know, I'm not just saying this as a compliment, because you're my guest here, but there's no fluff in the books, and this is an issue that I have with a lot of books I read, where I have to often skim and skip until I reach the interesting parts, while in your books it's just packed with knowledge from beginning to the end. Is this something you consciously decide to do when you write? And what is your writing process exactly, for things to be so prolific and clear and just packed with knowledge, basically?
Well, I don't know. I read a lot of books, and it annoys me that there's so much fluff in them. It really annoys me. It also annoys me when authors are repetitive. Mm-hmm. It also annoys me when they use too many words. And it annoys me when they keep using words such as however. So when I write, I usually chunk it down. That's one of my methods. I try to shorten the text. I write an article, for example, and before I publish it, I try to remove as much as possible. Removal, less is more. It's removal, basically. So I remove it by 50% usually. This can be removed, this can be removed, this can be removed. You chunk it down so that it's more dense. Mm. I'd say that I don't publish, I only publish 10% of what I write. That's also chunking down. So right now there's 20 articles on my website that are unpublished that you will never see because they're just not good enough. I don't like them. I have to really, really like it before I click publish. And sometimes they just sit there. And if I have an idea how to make the article better, then I can publish it. But most you will never see. And I just delete it again because it's boring. Mm. I have a sense. One thing I really have is I have a sense of boredom. I easily get bored. And that's why my writing is so dense.
Okay. How so? How is boredom related to having dense writing?
Well, if there's a lot of fluff, I easily get bored.
Yeah.
I've heard it all before. I've heard this garbage before. I'm going to delete my own article. It's so boring. Okay. I say, Fred, give me something new. Okay. Tell me something interesting.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I like that. I like that. And I've really noticed it. And I recommended, the first book I heard was Parallel Universes of Self. That was the one I started with 6 years ago. And since then, I've been, you know, just listening to one after the other. Recently, I've recommended it to my wife, who listens to it on her way driving to work. And she told me that she often rewinds chapters because they're so dense and filled with information. So, it doesn't happen often that you would rewind a chapter. Sometimes you just, okay, chapter's done, you just want to move to the next and see what comes up. But she's always, going back and making sure she didn't miss anything important. So I think it's a great quality to have.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Now you know how it comes. It comes because I am bored by fluff. And that's the advantage of being bored. It tells you when the energy is just not, it's just not divine, you see. Divine energy, high energy is not boring.
So I want to shift to a couple of other topics that I was curious to get your opinion on. I've noticed recently on, and because I'm on social media a lot, less now than before, but I've noticed that psychedelics, especially I think in the US, are becoming a lot more acceptable. People are more open to trying them and to having psychedelic experiences. It's becoming more mainstream, the idea of having a healing experience through having a psychedelic experience with shamans or whatever. I personally have never tried it, and I'm kind of on the fence. I'm not sure where I stand on it, probably because I've never tried it. So I'm curious what you think about this topic. Is it more harmful or more useful to experiment with plant medicine?
I have a lot of people asking me that, and I also have a lot of students who take psychedelics. I personally don't. I did when I was 18, 19, and 20 years old, but then I stopped. I like to say it this way: there's a, you can go up, or you can go down, or you can go sideways, and psychedelics is neither up or down, it's sideways. People say, is it harmful or is it good? And I say, neither. It's just somewhere out there.
Yeah, but it could be one of the two, depending on the person. If somebody's overdoing it, or if somebody's I don't know, a more aware person that knows what they're doing could have better results.
Yeah,
I'm curious. I'm just curious.
it does depend on who's asking too, and it depends on what level of consciousness they are, whether it's helpful or not. I'm sure that at a low level of consciousness, psychedelics can open you up and heighten your consciousness. But it's not the level I'm at. It's not relevant for my life. That doesn't mean it's not relevant for others and will help others. I'll tell you one thing. If I had to choose between pharmaceuticals or psychedelics, I would always choose psychedelics.
Because they're more natural and
Yes.
makes sense. Anyway, they are illegal here where I live, so it's not like it's going to happen anytime soon. It's just pure curiosity. The other topic I wanted to ask you about. I remember a few years back, I think, in one of your books, talking about conspiracy theories, and you were of the opinion that it's not very productive to get into conspiracy theories because you're not really you're not really helping or you're not really changing anything if you are getting deep into conspiracy theories. This was a few years ago. And now I've noticed recently, because I'm on your Telegram channel as well, that I do see some articles. I don't know if they fall under conspiracy theory categories.
Oh, they do. Absolutely, they do.
They do. So what happened there? Your intention changed, or your view changed on the topic, or?
No, my view hasn't changed, but I just see some people are horribly naive. You know, they come to me, they've never, ever heard. They have no idea how the world works. And I thought I didn't have to talk about any of this, but they're horribly naive. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So that shocked me. Since COVID, it's actually shocked me how naive people are. So I thought, okay, maybe it will help if I go in that direction. So perhaps, there needs to be a balance, obviously. And I try to make a balance, but not knowing anything about anything is not positive, and denying negative realities is not positive either. Acting like they don't exist, or being naive to a point where, I heard this on the news, so it must be true. There's nothing positive about that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not positive at all. There should be, I think, a baseline level of understanding that there are people who don't have our best interests in mind running the world, right?
Yes, a basic understanding of that, you know. And why I actually teach reality creation is because I've long rejected these people's teachings, and people apparently don't understand that. I thought it was clear from the beginning, right? Because reality creation is not taught in school, is not taught in the media, is not taught anywhere. I thought people realized that my teachings of reality creation go against everything these people say, but apparently not. So I'm going to be doing that more in the future, not too much, but a little more.
Okay. Well, I am enjoying them, as well as everything that you're posting on the Telegram. I love the photos that you share as well. They often, you know, they make me stop and make me think. Some of there are more like fantasy type of photos that I guess the purpose of those is to take a break from a mundane reality and transferring whoever's viewing them to like an alternative magical type of world, for even if it's just for a few seconds.
To shift. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm just having fun, you know. People are getting, actually some people get offended, but I'm just having fun. They take things too seriously.
I want to
have fun. And then they write to me, why are you posting this? Why not?
Some people like to overanalyze these things.
Yeah.
Indeed. So, Fred, if you don't mind, I want to get, it just occurred to me, I want to get your opinion on something about a lucid dream that I've had, and I know that it is a topic that I think you've spoken about before, but I basically a while back I had a lucid dream where, of course, I realized that this was a lucid dream, and then I suddenly became in control of the dream. And at first I started to do the typical things of flying around and all that stuff. And then I got this idea or like a thought that said, you could ask any question you want and you will get the answer. And for some reason in that dream, I asked, when am I gonna die? And that was the question I asked. And when I asked that question in the dream, I felt like there was an answer that was coming to me from behind the sort of a veil. It was coming. I felt it. And then there was suddenly something like a gate that just slammed, shut, closed, like this is not something that you're supposed to know. And that kind of shocked me, and I woke up. And I will never forget that experience. It left me, like, whenever I think and I remember it, I still like get sort of goosebumps because it was so real. And it was a crazy experience. So I don't know what's your feeling about this? What do you think it means?
First of all, before I answer, what do you think it means?
I do have a belief that we're not supposed to know when it's our time to go, because if we knew, it would it contradicts our purpose here. Because if I don't know, if I knew that I have 20 more years, I would probably say, okay, I'm going to spend 10 years being lazy, and then the rest of the 10 doing, I don't know, doing something else. Or if I knew that it's going to be tomorrow, then I'm going to spend the rest of my time being someone who I'm not today. So I think we're not supposed to know. And
we have this way of protecting ourselves from manifesting things that are not good for us, that'll crush us. Like having a million too quickly could crush you, so you protect yourself. Knowing when you die could crush you, actually. It could make you depressed, so you shut the gate. Because you have that belief, you manifest it. But it's also, do you really want to know?
If you'd ask me right now if I would have the choice whether to know yes or no, no, probably good. Not. No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to know.
It's no fun. First of all, it's no fun. Secondly, it's also kind of it contradicts free will, because you can still make many choices, right? Do you think the time of your death is predetermined?
On a very high level, yes. But on a very high level. So it's not that I can't do things that can prolong my life. So, for example, if I eat healthy and I take supplements and I'm careful, I could increase the possibility of extending my lifespan. And that is why people maybe 50 or 100 years ago were dying at an earlier age. So there are things humans can do to prolong their life, for sure. But because, as you said before, time doesn't really exist on a high level, then in some reality, I guess I already died, and that date is already, it's already happened.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Very interesting.
Okay. All right. That's a nice morbid way to wrap up the episode. But it's not very morbid. It is a topic I think about a lot, but not in a depressed way, but more as just as a reminder of how temporary things are, whether they're happy or unhappy. Everything's gonna pass, so it doesn't bother me to think about this.
Yes, awareness of death.
Yes. So anyway, Fred, I promised you that we'd take an hour, and it's been exactly 1 hour since we started. So I want to thank you very much for being here today. I really appreciate your taking the time. It's always really surreal to have a chat with somebody that I've known about for many years, reading their books, and then, you know, thanks to technology, we can have a conversation like this. So I'm very grateful for that. So Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was very pleasant, very easy. Thank you. Is the recording over now?
It's going to be over in a few seconds. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and see you next.